Welcome. This is Dr. Bill Blatchford. Welcome to Playing Your A-Game with Dr. Tracy Hughes. We have quite a nice group of people on the phone tonight. We have people registered. Approximately 80 people have registered for this call. They're scattered from New York to Seattle, San Diego to Florida. And so we have quite a nice group. Tracy, are you here?
I am here, Dr. Blatchford. Thank you.
Very good. I have a little echo in your voice, so you're going to have to speak up a little louder.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, so what I'd like to do tonight in moving forward with this is, first off, thank you to Rocket Dog, our marketing firm who marketed this call, Care Credit, who makes dentistry available for a lot of your patients, and, of course, Blatchford Solutions is also another sponsor on this call. This call will be recorded, and for those of you registered for the call, you will receive a CD of this call. You will not be receiving slides. There won't be very many slides, but what I'd like to do tonight is just start with what I believe is an absolute urgent message for all of you. Due to the economic readjustment that our country seems to be going through, and it's affecting almost every part of the country, I believe, number one, that we will come through this just fine. We've done this many times in the past, and we have one of these about every 8 years. And we've always recovered, and we'll recover from this one. In the meantime, however, I believe that all doctors and all businesses are going to have to get better at what they do. Most of our clients last year just experienced the largest year ever. Last quarter was exceptionally good for them. Now, what is a dichotomy in this is talking to laboratories across the country. They have seen about a 25% reduction last year, and, of course, Sullivan Shine and Patterson and various dental supply companies have laid off several hundred reps in the last few weeks. And so that means to me that dentistry, for the most part, is down along with a lot of other businesses. And what we have to do is get a message out to our patients that things are good, but more on top of that, we have to get better at what we do. What's changing is nothing. People still have incomes. People still have money. The only thing that's changing is they're barricading the doors and not spending it. However, they will spend it where they see value. So we have to get better at the various things we do. So we have Dr. Tracy Hughes tonight on this call. Tracy is actually not in our book. She's been a client for about a year and a half. She actually is a client because she read the book. She heard me speak at Chicago Midwinter a few years ago, actually went to our booth, bought the book, put the book in a drawer, did not read the book for a year, finally read the book, identified with some of the people in the book, said, "This is me." Tracy has been very successful. She's grown her practice in the last year. She bought a practice in Boulder, Colorado, and or Boulder County, and has grown it about 50% using the things that we've taught her. So, Tracy?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to start by asking you a few questions.
Okay.
Why don't you give us a quick background on yourself and how you joined our program, and also how your practice was going, why you hired us in the first place, what experiences you had up until that point, how you made the decision, how you bought the practice in Colorado, and how you made the move, and how you've grown it for the year. So that should take you a few minutes. So take it away.
Sure. I was born and raised in Iowa, and I graduated from the University of Iowa College of Dentistry in 1998, at which time I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, so I completed an AEGD program. After that, I was an associate for a couple years, and I had the drive then to become a business owner. So I bought a practice in a small town of about 900 people that was about 20 miles south of Iowa City. I grew the practice over the 7 years that I owned the practice, at which time I felt I was wanting to move the practice forward even a little bit more. I had written some goals. I was just having a very hard time reaching those goals. So I worked with a small local consultant who sort of focused on small changes in certain systems, but it just didn't seem to be producing any results for me. I continued on with practice. I obtained my sedation permit, and seemed as though I was doing pretty well, but I just was not feeling that the practice was going where I wanted it to go.
Well, Tracy, you were a young mother as well.
I was, or I am, I guess.
You are a young mother. But at that time, you had small children, you have a husband, you have a family, and you're trying to balance all of this. And so regardless of how much you grew the practice, there was a lot missing in your life.
There was. I would drop my kids off at daycare in the morning at about 6:30 in the morning, and I'd pick them up at 6 o'clock at night, and there was only about an hour of time that I had to spend with my kids before bedtime. That wasn't their bedtime, that was my bedtime. I was just so exhausted, I felt consumed by my practice. My staff overhead was 38% overhead, and I just felt like I was working for the staff to bonus, but there just really was never anything left to...
If I can interject right here for those doctors on the call, Tracy is talking about her staff overhead. By our definition, that includes salaries, matching Social Security, workman's compensation, retirement plan, basically anything it costs to have that staff on site. And the national average right now is just a little over 30%. 30% of the gross goes to the staff. We'll ask Tracy later in the call what hers is today. But our average is 20 for all of our clients. And the reason for that is we put some systems in place. And one of the things I'd like to point out for you participants on this call, in times like this, it has never been more important to control your overhead. Because if you're up there at that 75% or 70% overhead, which is an average today, you take a 10% reduction in your income, gross income, and you will see approximately a 40% decrease in your net compared to that practice that's down there in that magic 50-55%, which will only take about a 20% decrease. So that's an important number to remember. She was at 38% for staff. And
right.
Consultants were encouraging her to grow the practice.
Yes. I was working with another consulting firm at the time, and they kept wanting me to add capacity, and overhead just skyrocketed. It was very, very, I just didn't feel like things were going the way I wanted. I was exhausted and consumed by the practice. I just thought, I knew there had to be another way, but I just didn't know how to do it. And I attended the Chicago Midwinter Meeting in 2006, and ironically, one of my staff members had signed me up to listen to Dr. Blatchford speak for the afternoon. And I was just sitting on the edge of my seat. I wanted exactly what he was saying. He was saying you could work less and have more free time and lower your overhead. And I thought, well, gosh, that's what I want. I'm already working with a consulting firm. Why aren't I getting these things? So I went ahead and visited Nancy and Carolyn in the Blatchford booth, and I just broke down in tears. I was just very, very frustrated and discouraged and sad that I just could not spend more time with my kids, that I'm just working my tail off, and there's just no time with my kids, and it wasn't working for me. I just had to make something change so I could have more balance.
So, Tracy, you identified with one of our clients.
I did.
In the book.
I did.
April Zigley.
I read that chapter, and I felt like I was reading the story of my life.
Yeah. And April, by the way, has been on one of these calls and is currently producing about $1.5 million in a small town outside of Seattle, Washington, with a team of three. April works 3 days a week, and her team works four, and they get phenomenal results. But she also has two small children and a family to balance, and so that's why the three-day work week. So Tracy, tell us what happened. How'd you make the decision to move to Colorado? What prompted that?
What happened first was I made the mistake of putting the book in my drawer for 9 months, the A Playing Your A Game book. When I bought the book at the Chicago Midwinter Meeting, I went home and I put the book in my drawer, and for some reason 9 months later I took the book out and I related with the April Zigley chapter. And the reason that I waited to join the coaching program was for two reasons, and what I realize now that both of these reasons were a mistake.
What were the reasons?
The first reason was I was afraid the staff would not be supportive. I was working for the staff, essentially. They were motivated and enthusiastic because of an out-of-control bonus. After all, I was paying them 38% of the overall overhead. And that was a huge mistake. It wasn't the staff's practice. It was my practice. So that was a big mistake. That was not the right reason to...
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because we've seen a lot of doctors who are afraid to start a coaching program because they're afraid, well, what will their staff do? What would you tell those doctors at this point, Tracy?
Well, what I would explain is with Dr. Blatchford's coaching, he will help you uncover your vision of your practice as well as your goals. And from there, in my opinion, the staff needs to be able to be supportive and take ownership of your own practice vision. And in my practice, if during my employment process and if anyone shows within their actions or their attitude that they're not being supportive of my practice vision that I share with them, they're no longer part of my team. So the team needs to take ownership of my vision. And if they don't, that's okay. They can work somewhere else where the vision suits their own philosophy.
So, Tracy, what was your second reason for waiting?
Well, the second reason is I thought it was a lot of money. What I realized is it was costing me more to wait because of my out-of-control overhead than if I'd started the program the 9 months prior when I first considered it. So waiting.
Well, you know, it always amazes me a little bit. I've been doing this for about 25 years, and doctors consider the expense of a program like this, and yet here we are doing $500,000 or $1 million with overhead of staff alone at over 30%, and we basically get them down to 20% within 90 days, and that's $100,000 in savings. And yet people are looking for places to invest money today, and there aren't too many places. My accountant recently suggested burying money in the backyard. But that's a 2-to-1 return immediately.
And that's what happened. Within the first 2 months, I was able to lower my staff overhead to 22%.
Mm-hmm. 22.
From 38.
Yeah, excellent.
Yes.
So where'd the dream for Colorado start?
When I first met with, let me back up. My husband.
Yeah, let's play back up. Let's back up way before you met us.
My husband lived in Colorado when I first met him. So when we first met, he had lived in Colorado. I was in dental school, and I would make small weekend drives out to Colorado. We'd spend some time. He actually lived in Summit County, Colorado, and I just love the mountains. I love the weather. I loved all the outdoor recreation. It's beautiful weather. But silly me, I sort of reeled him in back to Iowa. I got tired of the long-distance relationship, and so he moved back to Iowa before I graduated from dental school. And so then we just stayed in Iowa City. We got comfortable. He got a construction site development foreman job. I graduated from dental school, and I bought my practice then in Riverside. So it was just a comfort thing for us. Our family lived in Des Moines, and you know, we never ever would have considered making a change. We just stayed there because we thought everything was good.
And it was good.
It was good.
You know, here's the interesting thing that I think that is so critical to what we were able to do with Dr. Hughes is that my wife and I sat down, as we do with all new doctors, and we spend a day with them. And when we ask the dream where they'd like to be in 10 years or 20 years, and they both look at each other and say, Colorado. And we said, well, why are you waiting? Life is short. And they had come that day to learn how to increase their patient flow, increase their overhead, and we're looking at moving into a new building. And within an hour, they were telling us, you know, we really don't want that. What we really want to do is live in Colorado. So, of course, we immediately came up with all, you know, as all people do, all the reasons you cannot do that. They already owned they were buying a house. They were just purchased this practice about 10 years before.
I had 70 new patients a month. I was on track to do $1 million that year. I had gotten my sedation permit. We can't move out of Iowa. Why is he asking me this, I thought. So then, you know, they got to asking us the questions, and he and Carolyn really helped open up and gave us permission to dream a little bit. And we did that, and we realized that we just settled in Iowa because we were comfortable there, but ultimately we really, really would like to be in Colorado. And so before we left the summit in West Palm Beach where we had met with Bill and Carolyn, we had decided we were going to move to Colorado. And so essentially, you know, I truly believe what guided my husband and I through this entire transition of selling my practice, selling our home, purchasing a new practice, and purchasing a new home in another state was keeping focused on our vision. And I had never had anyone ask me exactly what it was that you want. What was important to me? What gets me excited and keeps me going? What are my values? And and Dr. Blatchford and his coaching program sort of allowed us to dream a little bit and find out what it was exactly we wanted to do.
You know, one of the things we pride ourselves on is going into a consult like that with no agenda. That is, I have an agenda how the day is going to go, but I have no agenda what outcome we're going to have at the end of the day. And this was a typical example of someone who went into that, and they had the dream of living in Colorado eventually, but really had squashed that and put it way on the back burner. They just never thought it was possible. So, okay, so you sold the practice there. You were able to find a practice in Boulder County. Tell us what you've done with that practice, Tracy. You bought that practice, and I believe it was the location that you liked. You didn't want to be in Denver. You wanted a smaller town.
We didn't want to compromise again, just out of convenience of finding a practice that looked good. I wasn't going to compromise our dream location for a practice opportunity. So we first decided where it was. We wanted to be along the Front Range in Colorado, and we narrowed it down to two places. And from there, we decided Boulder County, and the opportunity arose. You know, there were just so many decisions that needed to be made throughout the whole process, and I really truly believe what kept me focused and able to make it through the transition was simply asking the question, and I constantly would ask myself this on a daily basis with every decision. I would just ask myself, does the result of this decision I'm going to make bring me closer to my goal or keep me from attaining them?
Mm-hmm.
And if it was going to bring me closer to my goal or get me to within the vision of my practice, then I knew it was the right decision. I learned to not panic. You know, when I felt like I was getting lost, I just changed where I wanted to go and kept focused on my vision. And I had a lot of challenges with that. I'll tell you, it wasn't always easy. But I kept the view on my vision. I wanted a home where I could see the Rocky Mountains. I just tried to picture it. More time with my family and weekend fun mountain getaways. That's really what kept me going. I bought the practice just a little over a year ago. And at that time, there are some things I might have done a little differently with the employees at that time. But it was important for me to share my practice vision with the employees that I purchased the practice. There were actually four employees at the time. And after I shared my practice vision, which is something that I put in writing, Dr. Blatchford coaches us to write a vision and put it in writing so we don't forget it. And I shared that with all the employees, and it got back to me that one of the employees had whispered to another, well, this isn't going to work in our practice. And very simply, she was no longer an employee the next day. It's extremely important for me to have my employees take ownership of my vision as well.
So this practice you purchased was a retiring doctor's practice. It was doing under $500,000 a year.
Correct.
You had three employees that you inherited there.
Yes.
Within a few months, you had replaced all three of them, I believe.
Yes.
And so you've just finished right at 12 months in that practice. And I believe you and I were reviewing the numbers the other day, and you increased that by over 50% in production the first year.
The first year I did, yes.
Yeah. And just for reference, about out of that, so you guys can all do the math here without reading the exact numbers, she did just shy of $800,000 this last year. What would you say your overhead was for the year?
I would have to say it was around 55%.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you shared with me earlier your employee salaries or employee overhead was right at 22% for the year.
At 22%, and they're very happy. My employees are very happy employees, and they have excellent attitudes.
And they're bonusing.
They're bonusing, yes.
And what would you say? Well, we can figure this out. Roughly, $800,000. They get let's just go 20%. 160. We had 160 to spend on salaries. Divide by three people. So, they're very happy at that level.
Right.
Tell us more about your practice. Like your hours, the days you work, the time you take off, the type of treatment you're doing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, here you are, a year into this new practice. What are you doing?
We are open Monday through Thursday. Monday through Wednesday is 8 to 4 p.m. It's important for me to be home so I have time to spend with my kids more in the afternoon after school and preschool.
So 8 to 4.
8 to 4, Monday through Wednesday, and Thursday is 8 to 1. And then we are home spending time with our families Friday through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
This summer, we're actually going to work Monday through Wednesday only, 8 to 4. We're going to take Thursdays off.
Mm-hmm.
We.
And I'm going to encourage you to do that. And for those of you on the call, I want to tell you that in 07, my highest producers were working 3.5 days a week. Not four, but 3.5. And what they do, they see patients 3 days, and that half day is a buffer day where they do their staff meetings, they do their administrative work, they do, and once in a while we'll do a large case, but we're finding that. And the other thing about that that's encouraging for Tracy is that two of my top three producers last year were women.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy, I find the women much easier to coach than the men. It's just like...
My husband will drive around and he'll be lost and will not stop very readily for directions, but I'm the kind of person who will just stop and say, give me directions so I can get straight to the point.
Well, your husband, Bill, is a man, you see. And,
yes.
and so, you know, men don't ask for directions. They'll get it out on their own driving around for hours. And
That's right.
One of our, my team pointed that out. That was probably the reason that, and of course, I being a man would never come up with that reason why men are harder to coach, but... yeah, I think you can do that in three. You know, you mentioned something earlier about increasing capacity versus demand. You want to talk a little bit about that?
At the time, when we had first met, I was wanting a new building. I wanted to add more space and more staff and more equipment, and I wanted a nice, great, big, huge, 3,800 square foot office. Right now I'm working in an office that's 1,200 square feet. I work out of two operatories, but we've learned to work a lot smarter rather than harder through your coaching and your accountability through block booking and other means. In the past, I've done the assisted hygiene and seen lots and lots of patients in the day. Right now, I think I see an average of probably three patients at most in the morning, and we see a few more in the afternoon. But we produce 80% of our production in the morning. We're doing most of our productive work there. And I found I'm able to be a lot more efficient, a lot more productive than having more space and equipment.
Mm-hmm. And without the ensuing overhead.
Correct.
Yeah, and you were being encouraged, of course, by
yes.
other people. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that stand to benefit by you building a big office, the people that build the office, the people that fill them with equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And
it just didn't make sense. I was, would you rather produce $1 million and net $250,000 at a 75% overhead, or would you rather produce $500,000 and have a 55% overhead and,
right.
and net the same? I'd rather work half as hard and earn the same income.
Well, I guess it depends a little bit what your motivation is. You know, if your motivation is net income to take home to support your family, then the 50% overhead at 500 is great. If the motivation is ego, it's greater to do $1 million even if you only take home 200 of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work, though.
It is.
I'd rather work a little smarter.
It is. Vacation time, we take eight vacations a week, and I have all my employees take that time off as sort of re-energizing time. They spend that time with their family, and so they're all re-energized and excited to come back to work rather than sort of dreading it like we
Tracy, your staff takes 8 weeks off, and they get paid straight through.
Yes.
And I know that you have implemented a system for answering your phone while you're on vacation. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yes, the phone is always answered when we're on vacation. The three team members will rotate cell phone duty, and what they do is they print out 2 weeks of the schedule, or you can do it by remote access if you'd like to do that way as well. But they answer the cell phone, and there is a little extra incentive bonus for that as well for every new patient that they schedule. When they answer a cell phone while they're on vacation, they're paid an incentive bonus for each new patient that comes through the door. And that's worked out really well. They actually kind of fight over who gets to take the cell phone.
I was just going to ask you, and you answered the question already. So there's no hesitancy on the part of the team members to answer the phone during the time off?
Absolutely not.
And one of our premises is that no one ever takes a vacation unless the entire team is off. I mean, you all take your vacations together, and we've proven over and over again that doctors hit that mechanical stage. After a vacation, we go through the creative and the very productive stage, and then after a period of time, we hit a mechanical stage, and if we stay there long enough, we actually hit the burnout stage, and then you really deserve a vacation. And of course, one of the Blatchford premises is that that being true, and we've tracked that in literally several hundred doctors, that why not take vacations before you hit that mechanical stage? So when Tracy says 8 weeks, that means about every sixth week you're taking a week off, and that seems to be about average. Mm-hmm. You go beyond that, and production starts to drop, diagnosis per day starts to drop. So we encourage that. Tracy, some of the things that that I get asked quite often from doctors is, could I do this on my own? Could I do this myself? Could I do it without hiring someone to coach me on this? What's your answer to that?
Well, I tried it, and it didn't work. In my opinion, it takes coaching and accountability. You need to be held accountable for if you're talking about the move or just growing your practice or reducing overhead, things like that. It took, in my experience, it took Dr. Blatchford coaching to give me permission to uncover my dreams and my practice vision. I tried other consulting firms, and it just didn't work for me. Dr. Blatchford, instead of just teaching the little tiny systems, what Dr. Blatchford taught me was to be a better leader rather than to be a micromanager.
Let's talk about that distinction for a moment, because I get that question a lot from doctors. Well, what's the difference between leadership and management? What is being a leader? And you mentioned earlier coming up with your vision, and I think there are several things that we need to do. I think that leadership is really the key. I think that's the first thing that we teach. And I think that's one thing that's going to make a practice do well in this period of time in the near future.
Well,
so vision was critical. And then from that point on, what are the critical steps in leadership that you currently do that have made the difference?
Well, I always thought I was a good leader, but what I realized was I wasn't a good leader. I was just likable because I didn't like conflict and confrontation, and
mm-hmm.
So I'd always just sort of let things slide so people would like me. And, of course, that didn't give results. So having my vision allowed me to make decisions better. Before I had a vision and knew exactly where I wanted the practice to go, I would make a decision, and then I would change it three times. And an employee would ask me a question, and I'd change it, and then I'd change my mind, and it drove everybody crazy. So then I was looking over everybody's shoulder and making sure things were getting done. And I know that's not being a leader. Now that I have shared my vision with my team, it's very, very easy to hold everybody accountable. We also sat down and we all created office agreements. Office agreements are not rules that are written in the negative. They're not policies and protocols. They're commitments that we write in a positive form that we all agree to and write together. So if someone breaks an agreement, it's very, very simple between the four of us to say, hey, did we have an agreement here? And that doesn't allow for excuses, and they agree to that, and then I say, can I count on you in the future?
Yeah.
And the way it was before, when I thought I was being a leader, but I wasn't, I spent so much of my time writing rules and policies for employees, and in this situation do this, in that situation do that. The coaching program allowed me to focus my efforts and time on getting results, which ultimately takes less time than doing what I was doing, trying to...
Well, that was one of my questions. A lot of doctors think that a program like this is going to take a lot of their time. You have children, you have a husband, do you have a practice? How did you solve that problem to say, okay, I have time to devote time to this program and make it work?
Well, what I found was, actually when I got everything implemented and it ultimately took less time because I was focusing my time on getting results prior to implementing the coaching program. I just felt like I kept focusing so much time on headaches in the practice. It seemed like, you know, 80% of our headaches come from the bottom 20% of our patients, and we just kept spending so much time focusing on that. Oh, you know, we need to implement a failed appointment protocol and scripts for that, and we need to get all our patients coming in through ReCare that aren't coming in. Well, through the coaching program, I realized that ultimately 80% of your income comes from the top 20% of your patients, and Dr. Blatchford has taught us and my how to actually spend our time praising the top 20% of our patients and thanking them. And
yeah, our belief is that you make 80% of your income on about 20% of the patient base, and we call that the top 20. And you make the next 30% of your income on the next 60% of your patients. That's your farm club. And then the bottom 20%, you actually lose 10% on. And what I have found in so many practices, in so many practices we start out with, is that they have, as Tracy said, lots and lots of rules, lots and lots of policies and procedures that are all designed to deal with that bottom 20%, which we're losing 10% on anyway. And
I'll never hear any of my team members say the word policy. We call that a naughty word in our practice.
Yeah.
We never say policy to a patient because it's
exactly
a negative connotation.
And it really is, because your patients don't care about your policy. I mean, it is a negative thing. You go to government offices and they tell you what their policy is, and none of you particularly improved. All right, so what I'd like to do, I have about 5:34 here on my time. I would like to open this up to some doctors to ask Tracy or myself some questions. Tracy has done an outstanding job of getting the results. I mean, she took over a practice of a retiring dentist. She's grown that practice. She's new in town. She doesn't know anybody in that town to speak of. She's grown that practice by 50% in 1 year. She actually dropped the overhead of that practice. Her net income is considerably higher than what the selling doctor had. How did she pull that off? So if you have a question, you have two choices. You can hit the *6 button on your phone, or you can go, if you're online and using the WebEx, if you're on the computer, you can just type it into the chat box and put send, and you can send that to me. You can just click on a box there and send it to me, or you can send it to all participants, and I'll be happy to read the question for you. So questions for Dr. Hughes. Well, Tracy, I'll ask you a question. I know it's going to come up. What have you done to market your practice there in Colorado?
Marketing. I didn't do a whole lot, actually, in the first 6 months. And we've sustained a new patient flow of probably around 15 to 17 new patients doing that. And because
And that's higher than the new patient flow of that practice when you bought it.
It was, yes.
What was it when you bought it?
It was probably 10 new patients a month.
So you've increased the new patient flow by about 50%, really without doing any external marketing.
Right, right. But
how did you do that? How did you take an existing practice? I mean, what did we teach you that allowed that to take place? Or maybe it wasn't anything we taught you. Maybe something you already did.
Absolutely. Telephone skills, the person answering the phone. You were able to teach us how to answer the phone properly. We script and role play, so we're prepared when the patient calls. And we know the right questions to ask patients. We decided to increase our marketing because effective January 1st, we became completely fee-for-service. The previous doctor, when he retired, he had 5 PPOs as part of the practice at that time, and it was pretty highly insurance-driven. And as of January 1st, we are now completely fee-for-service.
So you've dropped out of all the PPOs, changed your relationship with those companies, and I believe you mentioned in the report that you wrote for us that you... he had an accounts receivable which you did not buy when you took over the practice, and
yes,
at this point you have a credit balance, I believe.
We do, yes.
So what financial policies do you have in place in your practice that, let's say I'm going to have a couple crowns done, or I'm going to have laser perio treatment or something like that done, what's available to me?
We would be happy to offer you 5% courtesy reduction if you'd like to pay with cash or check at this time.
Uh-huh.
Would that work for you?
Well, that would probably work.
Okay.
But what if I want to make payments?
We'd be happy to do that. We can set up a payment plan, interest-free financing for 12 months through Care Credit, and we also offer extended payments up to 5 years.
Excellent. So in other words, you don't carry any receivables at this time?
No, we don't. No, and patients, in order to schedule any major block in our appointment, they prepay in order to reserve time.
Mm-hmm.
So
since they've already paid for these appointments, so what's your cancellation rate?
We don't have any cancellations.
Yeah, I mean, somebody gets sick once in a while, I suppose,
right.
Or a weather issue or something, but generally people have paid before they have your blocks.
Yeah, most of the
scheduled.
The crown and bridge visits, cosmetic laser periotherapy is all prepaid.
And a lot of your patients do have insurance.
They do.
And so you obviously, it sounds like you get paid before you start and they collect an insurance. It sounds like you and your team have some pretty good what we call enrollment skills, because in times like right now, to have grown your practice over the last year by 50% and everybody pays you before they see you, it sounds too good to be true. How have you worked with your team on we'll call it sales skills, enrollment skills?
Mm-hmm. What we've learned through the coaching program is to be able to ask patients questions and determine what it is they want, instead of us diagnosing and telling them exactly what they need. Nobody
mm-hmm.
likes to buy what they need. When you need a new roof, who likes to buy a new roof? When you need a new transmission, who likes to buy a new transmission? Well, it's the same thing with patients. It's important to ask the questions to create value for the type of treatment that you're able to provide in your practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that on the phone when the patient calls the first visit, and help them to start thinking about the type of care that they might be interested in.
And how, you know, besides the seminars that we've done, how do you train your staff, and how do you, how do you ensure that your staff, your team members, will actually ask these questions and follow through with these sorts of things? Because, you know, I think a lot of doctors are looking for that silver bullet. If I can get that one last phrase, how to say this to my patients, then I'll have it all figured out and things will work great. I think it's more of a matter of accountability and having your staff and your team members do the things. How do you work with your team on the case presentation and on these skills?
Well, I think it's important to do a lot of role playing and practice. Practice
mm-hmm.
the script, have them help you write scripts, and practice them, because anybody can write down a script and say, here, use it, but unless you really sit down and role play it in different scenarios, it's uncomfortable. It's always going to be uncomfortable.
Okay. So we have some questions here for you, Tracy. Quite a few.
Hi, Tracy. I opened up a practice from scratch like 3 years ago. I rented a space, built a practice, and have built it into a... We produced $1 million last year and collect $900. We're doing pretty well, but I don't know if I need coaching, because I find myself in an odd position of having zero cash flow in the bank. It's a very weird position. It's like, I don't know if my overhead is so out of control that I have no cash in the bank each week to make payroll. It's just a very strange...
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Since we don't know your name,
yeah.
You can answer these.
I'm Beth from Pennsylvania.
Here's my question. What's your new patient flow?
About 40 to 45 a month.
40 to 45 a month?
Yeah. Yeah. And
your overhead,
I can't handle the loan anymore.
If you have 40 new patients a month, are these? When I ask a question, are these Medicaid patients or are these private patients?
No, private. Well, we take three PPOs.
Okay.
So
you're not selling enough dentistry to these people, or your overhead is too high with that kind of. I mean, here's Tracy with 15 new patients a month, doing $800,000 at 55%.
Okay.
What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'm working so hard, and I'm frustrated because I can't give myself a raise.
Exactly.
It's very frustrating. So.
Well, what I'd encourage you to do is one of our representatives will contact you and do a profit assessment and see where the profit's going, because it should be going in your bank, and it's not.
It's not. I guarantee you that.
And I guess the question is, you know, what have you tried so far, and how's that working? You might want to change what you're doing.
I'm riding a bicycle, but I'm not going anywhere.
I do that 3 mornings a week. It's called a spin class.
Yeah, I'm not spinning on a spin bike, though. So I'm just working harder and harder.
All right. Here's a question from someone. Tracy, has CareCredit lending affected your revenues or whatever financing program with the credit freeze?
No, I don't think it has.
What we're finding, I can tell you across the board, our clients using CareCredit and some other lending agencies, people with good credit are still getting credit. It's not a credit freeze. The only credit freeze is in the paper when you read what the congressmen are thinking. But people are still getting money. I have a friend here in Bend, Oregon, who's a car dealer, who says he can still get basically the same percentage of people loans on cars. It's just that his number of people coming in has dropped by 40%. CareCredit is still loaning money to people that are qualified. Tracy, another question here. How has the economy affected your practice?
Well, I'd have to say I don't think it has, because a year ago the production and collections in the practice was about $450,000, and in the last year we increased it to $770,000, so that's pretty good growth. And I don't have, you know, since I wasn't there previously, but we just went fee for service as of January 1st. We have a full hygiene schedule, and we're scheduling to goal. So I would have to say it's not affecting it, and I don't let it affect it. I don't. It's not a discussion that we have at work. The TVs are not on CNN. We try not to let patients watch that. It's just not a conversation that we have with patients.
Yeah. So I think that's an important step. And by the way, that is strong leadership from the doctor. And for you doctors on the call, I can tell you absolute verboten subject in the offices that we work with is the economy and bad news. I can tell you that nothing is accomplished by you, the doctor, coming in and talking to your team about your stock portfolio losing money, or nothing is accomplished by talking to your patients about that, or talking about all of these bad news. Remember, if it bleeds, it leads, and so the newspapers love this stuff, but there's no reason to be having this conversation in your dental offices. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I don't know. Maybe the economy did affect Tracy. Maybe she would have doubled that practice this year in a different time. So
yeah, it could have been.
It could have been. But to grow at 50% in this economy, I think that's wonderful. Here's a question from somebody. What do 4 staff members do? And then he put a / assistant front desk hygiene. What are your positions in your office?
I have 3 team members and then myself. And all 3 of my team members are cross-trained to answer the phone, to schedule appointments on the phone to collect money. My hygienist does everything that she can do legally. She's trained in laser periodontal therapy, so she plays a big part in our periodontal program in our office. And my treatment coordinator is primarily at the front office, and she goes through treatment plans and answers the phone, schedules the appointments, and my assistant is primarily in the back with me at this time.
And I think also your clinical people also collect money, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, that's one thing that we teach is total cross-training, so everybody can do that. And in many of our offices, most of our offices, actually, the hygienist in the hygiene room, if you're computerized, they finish up the clinical treatment, they go ahead and make the next appointment, and they collect for this appointment. And it just saves that whole bottleneck at the front desk. It also frees up the people at the front. If you have one person in the front, and most of our clients do, we have proven systems in place that with 3 team members and a doctor, we have many clients doing clear up over $1.5 million. And you just don't need more people if you have the right people and the right systems in place. If you don't have the right systems and the right people, it takes a lot of people to get the job done. So that's how we work with a smaller staff. Other questions? From John. So what are the demographics of your area where your practice is located?
Let's see. Lewisville is what I call a suburb of Boulder, Colorado. And I'm sorry, right now I don't know the population at all, but it's a pretty highly affluent area. Population, sorry, I don't have the numbers. It's just a suburb of we're northwest of Denver. And
what supports the area economically? It's basically it's almost a suburb of Denver too.
Yeah, correct. There's a lot of IT companies,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of retired people.
Uh huh. And that was one of the things that we looked at in choosing a location in Colorado for Tracy was, okay, let's not pick a poor area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're choosing a new area to move to, pick a good area.
Mm-hmm.
And there are areas that are certainly better than others. Although it's not a, right in Boulder itself is very affluent. Where Tracy is not that affluent. It's
right,
more
no.
like what you'd find in basically any metropolitan area.
I think the average household income is around 100,000, 125.
Mm-hmm. So it's very affluent.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the choice, too, in picking an area.
May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm from the state of Michigan. We have, for the last 3 years, had a net migration out of the state, which is growing exponentially every year. I'm
yes.
well along in my practice, and so, you know, going to another state at this point with grandkids here isn't going to work with my wife. What are your suggestions for those of us who are seeing our patient base disappear, both because of the highest unemployment rate in the country and the net migration out of the state?
Well, let me tell you, I have several suggestions on that. For those of you in those circumstances, you don't want to move. You're there. You love the area, and you have children in the area or grandchildren in the area, family in the area, parents in the area. I have several clients in Michigan, and I can tell you exactly what we're doing. We are very carefully controlling their overhead because in a time like this, as your production goes down, as people leave, we've also had clients in areas like New Orleans when a lot of people left. We had to immediately control overhead, and that's exactly what we're doing in states like Michigan, northern Ohio, northern Indiana, Pennsylvania, upstate New York. All of these manufacturing areas are seeing a net growth, a net outflow of people, and what I find is that people are continuing to do business the way they've always done it. You've got to control your overhead, because you're going to have a decrease in production until people, and the sad part is, until people start buying cars again. It's going to be that way, and it could be that it's going to be a long time. If you read the world is flat and look at what's going on demographically in our country, we are no longer a manufacturing center of the world. And so it's a real issue. It's probably not going to bounce back in the near future, so you've got to control your overhead. Does that answer that question?
Well, see, that sounds good, control your overhead. And, I mean, for the last several years, my overhead's about 60 to low 60, so, and we're hanging in there.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty well established after many years, so it's not a huge issue yet. But
as it shrinks, unless you change things, the overhead will increase as a percentage. And we have
right.
many
but
clients
the,
in Michigan that are operating at the 50% range.
The only place to address overhead is the staff.
Not necessarily, but that's go ahead.
Well, what would be the other areas?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to take a look at is have one of our reps look at one of your profit and loss statements, and we could probably answer that for you, but without, it would just be shooting from the hip. But I will say this, that we know of doctors in Michigan that we're working with that had their biggest year ever last year. And they're close to Detroit. They're not right. I don't have anybody right in Detroit that told me that, but I have some that are adjacent to Detroit, suburbs of Detroit, that have had their biggest year ever. So you can still focus on the 90% of the people that are still there, not the 10% that are leaving. But it's a problem. I mean, I agree completely. But we will do well. Here's a question for Tracy. How soon did you see an improvement in cash flow and return on investment after starting the coaching program?
I would say it would have been within the first 2 months when I reduced my staff overhead from 38% to 22%,
mm-hmm.
and that happened within the first 2 months.
And you did that before you even moved from Iowa?
Right. That was that I started that process immediately.
Here's one of the things that I do remember about that transition. We did some changes in that practice and made that practice quite attractive, and it sold for a full-price offer within 2 weeks.
That's correct.
And part of it was people looked at that practice and said, the systems are great, the overhead is in great shape, and that practice sold quickly. So I'd say that typically we get those results within 60 to 90 days. Okay, here's a question. My staff complains that staff meetings are boring. What's a typical staff meeting consist of, and how do you engage your staff, and how often do you have them?
Staff meetings are boring. I'd question, first of all, if you have the right team members.
Good question.
You know, we have different team meetings in our practice. One we have every morning, it's our morning huddle, and it's geared for the day, make sure everybody's 100% and everybody agrees we're going to have fun for the day. We don't ever talk anything negative in the morning huddles. It's all leaving home issues at home and being 100% ready to go at work. We have every night an evening huddle as well, and it's the same thing. It's time to give acknowledgments to each other and be positive. We don't talk about the negative things that happen during the day. We have one agreement in our office that we don't bring complaints to any of the meetings. If we do, you need to bring a potential solution for that complaint or the issue. So our meetings are not nagging sessions or worrying sessions. We also have one weekly meeting every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. At that time, we spend time role-playing our scripts and reviewing practice numbers. Going through any, you know, thing where we can improve, anything that maybe has gone on during the week where we can improve. We review our surveys.
So you have some training sessions as well.
Training sessions, right.
Yeah.
We review smile reminder surveys. We offer all of our patient surveys, and we review those surveys and make sure we respond to those and find ways to improve
Excellent.
The feedback we get from our practice. And once a month, we have a four-hour meeting where we spend 1 hour on different topics for 4 hours. So we're talking about four different topics, and that could be recent continuing education, or we always role play and practice scripts for an hour, and that's the first thing we do. We'll do a book review. We all read a book together as a team on sales or marketing or sales book. And we'll review that and do a book review.
Yeah, many of our offices, for those participants on the call, are reading a book a month as a team, and they review that book, and they apply that knowledge in that book to their practice and how they can improve it. Because one of the things I've found is that most team members and doctors have not read a business book in years, and there's a lot of information out there mm-hmm. that we can use.
We have different marketing things we'll discuss as well. Right now, I'm training my team on handling sedation patients and sort of a new sedation patient intake sort of program. And so we'll listen to an online training session for an hour, and then we'll discuss that. So it concerns me a little bit to hear that your team thinks your team meetings are boring. I used to think that our team meetings were just time to complain, and everybody would do a lot of complaining, which was good to get it all out, but nothing was ever done about it. So we always have an action plan as well, and we follow through with what we discuss in the team meetings with an action plan.
Excellent. Other questions for Tracy? Either verbal or written.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm from Maryland. I want to know what verbal skills you used when you told the patients you were leaving the plans.
That is something
become
that,
fee for service.
That Nancy, our personal coach through Blatchford, helped us through. I personally informed every patient over the last 6 months that came into the practice. And I essentially let them know that what we have found that works well in our practice to help keep our billing costs low and our quality high, as we have decided to eliminate ourselves from the middleman position with your insurance. And then I would proceed to tell
reservation.
Them what this means to you is we will still submit your claim for you. We'll still act as your insurance advocate. The only difference is we ask that you pay at the time of service, and your insurance will reimburse you directly. And if they were contracted, one of the two contracted that I continued, three I never signed up to begin with. Three of the five plans I never contracted with to begin with.
And I will point out, these were plans that the selling doctor was contracted with.
Correct, yes. The other two plans that we were contracted with, we did inform them that we're changing our relationship and will no longer be contracted. And then we told them what we were going to do for them. We actually
wrote out scripts for them.
Yes.
Very good. A question here from Craig Barrows. Did you implement specific meetings and durations, or is it left up to the doctor?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The question is, do you implement specific meetings and durations, or is that left up to the doctor? I will answer that. We have very specific suggestions for meetings and durations and frequency of those meetings in the program.
Right.
Other questions? Anybody else?
May I ask Tracy
yes.
a question?
Go ahead.
Sure.
Tracy, how many services do you refer out? Do you do everything, or do you refer to some specialists? And how many hygiene days do you have? Three and a half, or
hygiene days we have 3.5.
Okay.
And services, I used to pretty much do everything, all my extractions, most my endo, minus some molar endo. And when I moved to Colorado, I decided I was going to only do the things that I enjoyed, and I didn't necessarily enjoy doing extractions. So I refer out most of my extractions now. I refer out most of my molar endo. I'll do some premolars and anterior endo. I do sedation dentistry, so we do a lot of restorative. And I also enjoy laser periodontal therapy, that I do quite a bit of that as well.
Okay, I couldn't quite hear all that, but you do IV sedation or oral sedation or both?
Both. I had my IV permit in the state of Iowa, and I just had my case observation to obtain my IV permit in the state of Colorado. The reason it took me so long is I had to have a trained team, and that took me about a year to obtain.
Mm-hmm.
So I should be getting my IV permit in the next couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So here's a question from somebody to the host presenter. What is the first step in getting started with the program? And then getting started, I guess, what's the first thing you do? The first step you do is one of our reps will contact you, return the call, and they'll work out. I have a slide here, as a matter of fact, that says what's next. And once you get your financial arrangements all taken care of, we schedule a date with you where we meet with you for the best part of a day. We determine where you're headed, help you assess where you are now, and then between us figure out a way to get you from point A to point B. And then the program is about 12 to 14 months of coaching. During that period of time, we have a couple seminars for your entire team. We send a consultant into your office, but about 90% of the work that is done, and I think this is the thing that Tracy referred to so much this evening, is it's direct coaching with me via telephone and internet to get the results. It's not just information. I know that some doctors are looking for the silver bullet. If I get that one last piece of information, I can make this work, and I can tell you that's not it. It's the same as me having broke my back last year in a bobsled accident, in the Olympic bobsled run in Park City, and you know, I've always worked out several days a week, and after that I hired a personal trainer. And it's really interesting, the difference, just knowing the trainer is there waiting for me at 6 o'clock in the morning makes a huge difference to my commitment to the exercise. And I think it's a lot of what we do is just being accountable. So I want to thank everybody for being on this. We would encourage all of you to contact, or these reps will contact you, and we'll return their calls. We'll be happy to fill out that profit assessment and talk to you about the potential of our program. Tracy, I want to thank you very much for your time this evening. I know your time is valuable, and I know you're heading for a CE course tonight and time away from your family. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Blatchford. I definitely could not have gotten through this process without you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate everything you've done.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night, everybody.